Hello, this is Mike Olson, Director of Development with Stand Up for Kids Orange County and host of the Listen Up, the Stand Up for Kids podcast. On today's episode, we'll be speaking with Corey Tomlinson, an OC native and the founder of Make It Loud, an organization connecting athletes to the causes that matter to them. We're going to talk to him about some of that and then get into the topic of adversity, how to deal with it, and how to help others. Welcome, Corey. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I'm really excited.
All right. So Corey, let's start off with just a little bit of information about you. Where are you from? What is Make It Loud?
Yeah, so I am born and raised in Foothill Ranch, California. So a little suburb in Lake Forest area. Have been in Orange County my entire life and made my way up to LA for school, went to school at UCLA, but then made my way right back down to Orange County right there after school. Love it here. But I started a company back in 2019 called Make It Loud that exists to support the bridge between the platform and the awareness that can come from a professional athlete's platform. And then also bridging that gap from them over to charities and causes that need some support and awareness from the platforms of large influencing individuals, especially in the era of social media. So I've had the honor and privilege to get to walk alongside some people I call friends that happen to have a cool platform in various different professional sports and collegiate athletics. And so I basically, for like my day job, I get to just work with charities and see where they need some space to provide more awareness for their programs and link them up with influential people who really care about the cause that they support.
Awesome. That sounds really cool. And a lot of the athletes and the folks that you work with, those kind of came from your, I guess the genesis is from UCLA and your work there, correct?
Yeah. So I had the opportunity to be the team manager for the UCLA women's gymnastics team, my 4 years during undergrad. It was definitely a full-time job amongst also getting a bachelor's degree in psychology, but while I was there, I had the opportunity to and was very fortunate to get to work with some of the highest caliber student athletes in the gymnastics space. Coming from fresh off the Olympic Games in 2012, also, I was at school in the middle of the 2012 Olympic Games, and then I actually went back and had a little short run after the 2016 Games when two Olympic medalists made their way onto the team. And through there and the network of UCLA and the athletic department there and just the high caliber of athletic success that comes from UCLA, I found myself in some networking circles that really held a lot of, I had held a lot of respect for the people that I was getting to be in the room with that were past athletes in basketball and football and even soccer that, getting to rub shoulders with them as a fellow Bruin was a really huge privilege. And coming out of UCLA, I found myself in a space where I could call these people friends and part of the Bruin family. And leading into my next chapter, working for a nonprofit for 5 years, doing some athlete development and some athlete representation within that nonprofit, really led me to a space to get to use my network for good in a lot of different ways.
Cool. And I mean, we've talked a few times and one of the, I don't know if this is the right phrase, but you're a little bit of like an athlete whisperer. Part of your role was when there are difficulties that, you know, an athlete goes through, could be an injury, could be a mental health, could be on, you know, all kinds of things that everybody goes through. But, you know, especially when you're a world-class athlete, the pressure and the physical and the mental tolls that takes. Part of your role was in supporting those athletes, correct?
Correct, yeah. You know, where that really stems from, I would say, is walking onto campus at UCLA, you know, I hadn't worked with world-class athletes ever before, but I really believe in the idea that building relationship with people builds a trust bridge that creates an openness for conversation and the ability for people to feel as though they can help, they can process things with you. And as a friend, and I used to call myself the big brother of the UCLA gymnastics team, you build this family bond with people that then opens you up to conversations like that, where you would be faced with coffee conversations, sitting on their couch, you know, going to the movies together, whatever it might be, going on a run. And they would disclose some information in terms of physical adversity they were facing, mental adversity that they were facing. And I found myself in a space that I was definitely being trusted by high caliber athletic individuals that were facing adversity that I had never truly gone through in my life. But I was getting to be in a space where I got to be an ear to listen, most importantly, but then got to also be trusted with just any advice that I felt as though was necessary at the time. And then, but also kind of living life alongside of them and making sure that I could be of support with them vocally, or just with a good fist bump or a nice hug after a routine that might've been hard in a season that was providing some really interesting challenges. So in the gym, that was really my goal. Every single day, making sure I could be there for every single student athlete. But carrying that into my now career, I found myself just in a space where those same student athletes and those that I've grown my network into will pick up the phone and call and say, this is what I'm going through. Like, do you have any advice? I mean, it literally just happened yesterday. Someone was processing through some adversity that she was going through. And I didn't actually provide advice. I just said, I'm proud of you. Keep going. You're going in the right direction. And sometimes people just need that attaboy moment to keep their head up and their heart strong and moving forward. So that's kind of how I found myself in that space of walking with people through their adversity.
Yeah. And I mean, what you just said there parallels a lot of what we do with Stand Up for Kids, like, you know, working with these kids on a daily, weekly, monthly basis to work with them on big stuff and little stuff and just kind of be a constant for them. So you kind of have a similar, one of your avenues anyway, one of your roles was kind of that for those athletes. So now you've got this experience, you've done this for a while. Somebody has an issue, do you have like a playbook or a thought process that you go through when you're working with somebody?
You know, I really believe in the individuality of every moment. And, you know, I have found that there are times when you can get stuck by playing that game of comparison, right? It's not, your situation is very similar to that of this other person that I walked with through hand in hand in this way. And people want to hear that their story and their situation is unique, because they're feeling different things. They're mentally facing different things. You know, the experiences of their past have led them through a nurtured experience in a very different way than the next person. So from a similar standpoint, I'm not sure that there's a hard and fast playbook, but if I were to kind of, in words that I've heard you use, or, you know, kind of think about in that moment that adversity is being shared with me, what is that triage process? I would say number one is always to listen first and to make sure that my voice is secondary to them telling the truth of their story. People want to know that their truth is being heard. And as long as they have someone having an ear to listen to them while their truth is being shared, they're going to feel like they have taken advantage of the first step in any sort of adversity that anyone faces, and that's admitting adversity and being able to talk about it instead of just facing that adversity alone. So listening is definitely step number one. Step number two is making sure that they know that they aren't alone in it, and that I'm here for them and in any way that I possibly can. And when someone knows that they have a safe place to share and they have a safe place to experience whatever adversity they're facing, it's a good relieving moment to take a little bit of the weight off of their shoulders. I make sure that they know that it's not that I'm going to solve their problems for them and I'm not going to do the dirty work for them, but that at least they know that they have a friend that they can share with and can understand. And I think the third step for me, after I've listened and that I've made sure that they know that they're not alone, is just to make sure that they continue to do, I encourage them to continue to do the work on their own, to face their adversity with the positive mental mindset that have brought them through some of their highest highs before. I think not a lot of people realize that the emotions that you carry through in your greatest successes can be tapped into in some of the moments of your lowest lows. When you're facing something that is so hard and face value, people are like, I don't know if I could ever get through this. The point of inspiration really comes from that moment you're standing on the top of the podium, or you're getting the gold medal around your neck, or you are holding up the MLS Cup, or you made your first NFL roster. Those moments are those moments you got to look back on, because they were all faced with adversity leading up to it. To be able to feel that moment of success should be your North Star that you are really looking towards, to say, hey, I remember feeling that feeling one day. Let's continue to remind ourselves of that. And so that's my third step, is just making sure that I continue to point them towards that North Star, and knowing that that positivity and that optimism is a place that they can tap back into emotionally, even on some of their hardest moments of their life.
Makes sense. Could you give an example of, like, and I know, and I guess the other thing I was thinking too, is you, the three steps that you laid out, like, to a layperson, that sounds like, sure, I could do that. Like, that seems reasonable and rational. And from a mentoring perspective, yes. But I know you have, like people reach out to you, people trust you. Like, there's like the Corey special sauce that that you bring to the table in a way that other people don't, apparently, because you are, again, you are that trusted soul for a lot of people. That's interesting.
Yeah. I'll give you a specific example. I mean, a close friend of mine, he is actually on the Cleveland Browns now, but that's kind of his North Star. Johnny Stanton signed with the Cleveland Browns last season. And I'll tell you, like, 4 years ago, I was sitting next to him when he was like, I'm going to the combine, but they're asking me to do some position playing that I'd never played positions of. She comes out of college and quarterback. They're saying, hey, go, you know, go play tight end at the combine. And he's like, what the heck is going on right now? So he was in a position where it's like, you know what, do what you're told and just keep putting your head forward. Fast forward, the adversity that Johnny experienced was getting signed to the Minnesota Vikings, playing his first preseason game. Things went really well. He's playing fullback at this point. And then his second game, things were going well until he had a season-ending injury where he completely obliterated his ankle. And this was just in a preseason game. And at the end of the day, every NFL player, yeah, they want to have their North Star be, you know, make the NFL roster, but really they want to have this illustrious, beautiful career that we see in you know, NFL heroes, that of, you know, the Peyton Mannings of the world and the Tom Brady's of the world, with these illustrious long careers, despite where they ended up coming into the league in the draft. So Johnny's story was just like that, an undrafted free agent getting signed with the Vikings, but then game two in the preseason, feeling like it's not even counting, and he's out for the rest of the season. So the triage process that really got carried forward in that moment was, obviously, that sort of injury, you have this designated amount of time that you need to heal. So, you know, mentally, I'm out for 9 months. I gotta get as great as I possibly can mentally in these 9 months, but I also have to rehab physically to get back to even an even better position than I was 9 months ago when I originally shattered my ankle. So I listened to him, I heard his story, I heard his pains, I heard where his heart was at. The second piece, after I listened, you know, making sure that he knew that I was there for him, that turned into lunches, some coffees, you know, we would just go and just make sure that relationship was on point, to know that he had people locally that were supporting him, despite him not being at the Vikings facility after being placed on injury reserve. And then the third step there, his North Star, like I kept reminding him, you know, your North Star is that you're going to get back on, up on the field the way that you've been on the field before. You're going to put that jersey on the way that you have put the jersey on before. You're going to have fans in the stands. Your family will be there to cheer you on and to scream your name when you take the field once again, when you get back up on the field. And so every day when he would wake up knowing he had to go to rehab and he had to do his stretches and he had to progress from not even being able to walk to being able to run up and down the field and basically play crazy football in pads, that process took a very long time. But when he had that North Star ahead of him saying, I want to put that jersey back on no matter what team it might be for in the future, I want to make sure that I'm doing this for, to the best of my ability. We had to make sure that all three of those steps were tapped into frequently and that his North Star really stayed his true North Star.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So follow-up question, if we can take this, let's take this to not a superstar athlete scenario and thinking about a North Star, like a lot of people haven't ever been on an NFL team or won a Super Bowl or
same.
Been at same. This like pinnacle level. And maybe it's a place that somebody wants to go to. So is it envisioning, you know, if you haven't hit that place yet, is it just kind of having a vision for where you want to go and that helps drive you?
Yeah, you know, I think goals are super important to set, and goals then lead into the conversation of dreams and vision. And I'm a big advocate of vision boards and you know, creating the life that you want to live of sorts in a visual representation to be as your North Star. But aside from that, I think from people like you and I who are you know, trying to make our way in a career, and also people just around us in our community who are trying to figure out what even their next step tomorrow is, what their next step the next hour might be. I really believe that it's important to have some sort of inspiration in your life to always look back on and always be able to look to say, you know, this is the thing that's driving me forward. I know I hear from a lot of parents that their North Star, that their inspiration is their kids. You know, they have to work really hard to support their family. I hear a lot of people, you know, just out of college, their North Star is this dream that they've always had since they were a little kid. I mean, and I remember when I was a little kid, like the dream was to be a dolphin trainer, and, you know, taking the marine biology class in high school and then starting up at UCLA, like thinking, you know, the marine avenue was going to be where I was going to head, only to be redirected when, you know, the psychology route and the sports route really took over my heart. But that dream and the inspiration was always there. So I would say, like, you know, having inspiration nonetheless is really important. And I have a story of my own that real quickly that I'd like to share. I shared it with one of my athletes yesterday. But I remember in college, I was facing personal adversity. And at the time, it was just something that was really bringing me down. It was adversity that existed that I felt like was in my control, but it wasn't going my way. And ultimately, what I did is I wrote down on a piece of paper what I wanted. I said, I want to get like at least a 3.5 GPA at UCLA. I want to have no gossip in my life. I want to make sure that there's no drama in friendship and that everything is transparent and talked out the best of my ability. And I said those things because I was not having a ton of success in those spaces. A lot of adversity was being presented in those spaces. And what I did is I put those three things on a piece of paper written down. And I found my favorite shoebox. I just bought a pair of Nikes at the time. And I got my favorite shoebox. It was completely empty. And I just put this one piece of paper inside of it. I was the only person that knew what was inside. But then I put that shoebox up on a shelf by itself. And for the rest of the year, every time I looked at that shoebox, I knew what was inside. I knew in my heart the inspiration that I was chasing after and what I was trying to avoid as well. But that inspiration was my guiding North Star every time I woke up to be the best version of myself that I could be. And all it took was just something to look at. And at the time, it was just a Nike shoebox that really led me forward. So that's kind of how I've enveloped this whole triage and adversity process in my own life too.
Well, I'll try to make it tangible. I have a little a box, and that box kind of represents this bigger thing.
Yep, exactly.
And I think you've kind of already went down that road. But, you know, life throws you curveballs. Good, sometimes good things happen. Sometimes bad things happen. Sometimes really bad things happen. And some you have very little control over. Is there anything you would say about like preparing for negative things to happen? Is there a preparation plan? It's setting goals, I think, is part of that. But is there any other kind of tips you could give just to kind of be generally ready for life to throw you a curveball?
Yeah. It's the age old question, right? Because when life throws you curveballs, you always kind of look at it in the moment and you say, I'm not ready for this. Like you always feel this emotion of surprise. But I would say, you know, there are three things that really come to mind that I always try to make sure are really solid in my life. And I know it typically will work for people is, you know, number one is community. When you have the right people surrounding you and the people that you choose to be around you, that's a huge thing in my life, is making sure that I like to say I've chosen really deliberately who I give the microphone to in my life to speak into my life and be there for me when life does throw me curveballs. Those moments are really important for you to know that you do have someone who will listen when you just need to talk out your curveball. So that's number one. Number two, I'm a big journaler. I'm a big write it down, get it out on paper to get it out of my brain. So it's not just like piling up in my brain, but it's more out on paper in a sense. And so I always have my journal close by to make sure that I have that escape to really get away for a second, but also just get it out on paper tends to really help me. I also know that journaling isn't something for everyone. So that could be a very personal habit. And then I think the third thing for me, other than community and then some sort of outlet to express what's happening in your brain, is just the idea of having something that you can fall back on that you will 100% always feel joy participating in. For me, it's a hobby like art. It's picking up a canvas and taking a paintbrush to the canvas and just like saying like, this is how I'm feeling right now. Is it scribbly? Is it geometric? Is it perfect? Is it what is it that you need to express right now? And finding art was not an easy path for me. It was actually suggested by another much wiser person in my life, where they were like, hey, when your brain is going a million miles a minute and your heart can't even catch up to the emotions that you're feeling in your head, you need some sort of outlet to be able to express that. For a while, I was using fitness to do that. I was going on long runs, but eventually my knees were like, you're the worst. This isn't working. We need to find some other avenue. And art and many different forms was the way that I chose to express that. So those are three like really practical ways that I typically like to have in place and always know that I can fall back on. But it's not to say that those moments of adversity don't come with a lot of challenge and in a space to not even have those three things be able to solve it. I think a lot of adversity is things that we need to take to some outside help to be really be able to start to sift through some of the real life problems that we face day to day.
Yeah, I like all that you said there. And I think, you know, your three things are healthy outlets, healthy places to go. And I think having a toolkit, having some idea of where you're going to go in advance is helpful so that you don't go down the unhealthy routes, because there's a lot of unhealthy places you could go to cope with adversity as well. But each of those things does take effort and work to, like you said, journaling. I'm not really a journaler. I kind of would like to be, but it doesn't flow really for me. So I've got to find what's my version of journaling that's going to get things out. And then finding the right people is also not easy. Not always easy, depending on your circles.
Right. I was thinking about what you all do with Stand Up for Kids as well in that community answer, right? Because it's the support system that you know is there. You don't always have to be there 100% of your day. You don't need to be there every single day, but you always need to know that there's a circle that's with you and for you and will fight for you and also tell you like the hard things when the hard things need to be told. And, you know, in my space, you know, not all of those conversations are like, Corey, this is something hard I'm going through. Will you help me through it? Like some of those times are me picking up the phone and being like, hey, this is gonna be a hard conversation. Like I'm seeing this side of you being painted on social media, but like, I think that the truth of who you are is over here. Like, where is this gap that needs to be filled and where is this coming from? And there are hard conversations that need to happen. But at the end of the day, it's all rooted in a space where there's the community surrounding this person needs to be honest with them and make sure that they're hearing some things that need to be put in place that they've once seen that were really healthy motivations for them that they aren't seeing now. You know, it's getting some of my athletes involved in volunteer work that has been a huge outlet for them. You know, in the midst of one of my gymnasts, you know, facing a nearly season ending injury, but it affecting her mental health, the best thing that she possibly could do was to get involved in volunteering for a local childhood cancer nonprofit because it allowed her the space to mentally distract her from what was going on in her athletic career to a healthy degree. But also giving back does something physiologically, and I'm no psychologist, I'm no psychiatrist, but it does something physiologically to be able to bring joy to someone else, to encourage someone else, to do something to give back. And so that's where the volunteerism and where my passion of alignment with charities, with professional athletes is where my passion sits, is recognizing that yes, the platform of an influential professional athlete can be very beneficial to a charity, but the charities don't often see that what they're providing as a space for outlet professionals and for athletes and just people in general is a very healthy place for connection points to happen for professional athletes as well. So it's definitely a great full circle place to find community and find a space of outlet.
Symbiotic relationship.
Hey, that's what it's all about.
Hey, I want to talk about hard conversations. So like you said, I'll talk about Stand Up for Kids perspective. So we're working with homeless youth. They've generally made some bad decisions along the way. They've had life. They've been thrown a lot of curveballs. They're dealing with adversity. They join our program. We line them up with mentors. We have our staff involved. They're getting, they're hopefully getting that sense of community. That's why it's one of the big benefits that we offer and ways that we help them is providing that safe space and that person to talk to. But we do have to have hard conversations a lot of times because it requires effort on their part to go get a job, try to stay clean, go back to school, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's pretty often that our people have to have these difficult conversations to motivate and empower and be the voice of reason from time to time. So I guess a question for you would be, what's a tough talk look like? Has there been an athlete that is making poor life choices that you've had to like step in, or can you think of a scenario there?
Yeah, you know, thinking back, trying to think through some of those conversations that I have had, you know, I knock on wood, there haven't been significant life-altering moments that I've really had to redirect, which it's not me at all in those moments that I believe is like the curator of making sure that they're on track, but truly I believe in the sense of balance that comes from making sure that you have a great balance of your work, which is their sport career, your life, your family life. So making sure you have great relationships with your family members, some friendship involved, some social ability in there. And then I always add in the charitable involvement as such a huge aspect of who someone is as a well-rounded person. So luckily I haven't been a part of entirely life-altering sort of like, hey, you're doing a bad thing, let's get back on track moment. But what I will say is as you were sharing through that, the thing that comes top of mind is the ability for hard conversations to happen more frequently in order to build trust between two parties, right? So the only way that anyone is going to be the best professional athlete that they can be is they have to show up. So in order for a family that you serve or a person that you serve, in order for your services to really benefit them, they have to show up to the job interview. They have to show up to school. They have to show up to their mentoring appointment. They have to get on the phone and do kind of follow the system that you guys have seen to help truly end youth homelessness in individuals' lives. They have to show up, which takes a decision in their heart. And so what I would say is, although I'm not seeing like these life-altering stepping in the middle of these conversations, I have had really hard conversations with people that are with athletes. And I say, hey, you're not going to be where you want to be in 6 months if you don't show up. If you choose to not go to your physical therapy appointment because you're tired and you'd rather play video games, how do you think you're going to reach your North Star? If you're going to choose to not eat healthy in this season and you're 3 weeks out from the opportunity to step back on the field after being out for 6 weeks with a knee sprain, and you're trying to prove that you're going to be on the U.S. men's national team, do you think that a ton of whatever it may be, insert unhealthy food habit here, do you think that that's the best avenue by which you're going to be able to step back up on the field and say, I have no regrets and I'm in the best shape of my life? And so when we can associate these two worlds, yeah, I have had those hard conversations, and it's not easy to have, you know, nutrition and physical fitness conversations coming from a guy who was a team manager and you know, I am in no way, shape, or form a nutritionist or a weights coach, but I have walked alongside of enough people to know that those things are part of the formula that are going to help you be able to, in a grander context, stand on top of the podium at the end of the season and say, I have no regrets for this season that I just faced that was filled with adversity. So the idea of showing up is really where I would come in with that conversation. And I think that that's a story that can be told to people in life and career with frustrations of their people with people at work, with their boss, whatever it may be, you know, ending the cycle of youth homelessness in Orange County. Like, if you don't show up and bring yourself forward to say, this is a decision I want to make to make my life better, make my life for my family better, make whatever it might be, I think we just all just need to show up in a space and say, like, I'm committing to this, and then look at what commitment really feels like and where accountability needs to come in order to make sure that showing up is a habit that can't be broken.
Yeah. And we, that is one of the cool parts about our charity, about our nonprofit, is that we do require you to show up. So that is there. It's one of the two requirements we have. One is that we support youth, which is ages 12 to 24. And two is that you show up. So you have to commit to being at a meeting when you say you're going to be there. And if you're not, and if you do that enough, then you can't be a part of our program anymore. So it takes that you have to have that commitment. So it's not like we're going to drag you along by your ear and lead you to the promised land or whatever. We're not going to solve all your problems. We're not the magic bullet here. It's you got to do most of the work. We're just going to be there when you need guidance, need that extra push or nudge. We will give you a nudge, but we're not going to drag you. Another question. Can you give me a scenario that's a little more acute with adversity? So I'm at a gymnastics meet and I'm about to get on the balance beam and I'm freaking out and I don't feel like I'm going to do well, or I twisted my ankle in the last run and now I'm a little bit injured and I'm short on confidence. Can you give us one of those scenarios?
Totally. Well, I mean, you chose the number one confidence, okay. The number one confidence scenario in the sport of gymnastics, right? When people think about gymnastics, yeah, it's not running full force speed at a stationary object going over the vault table. It's usually the fear of standing on a 4-inch wide balance beam and doing flips, tricks, and twists that is just so, it's mind blowing. But yeah, so from that perspective, your sport, the sport really provides like different fields of adversity that happen like moment to moment that you have to figure out how to refresh your mind in a space to let go of what has once happened and refresh to be able to be at your best when your best is needed. Now, the example that I'll give is for those that don't know how a gymnastics meet works is you're typically given a very, very short amount of time to warm up on the event prior to actually being able to compete on it. So in that 4 minutes that a team of six people have to warm up on the balance beam, you have about 30 seconds when you really do the division there to be able to get up on the beam and practice your skills before you are judged by two judges on a scale of 1 to 10 with little minor deductions here and there that will be taken away from you. Now, even Olympic champions fall. I love to inspire people with that because there hasn't been a single gymnast There hasn't been a single gymnast in history that has ever had a career that hasn't involved falling at some point in his or her life. So it's a familiar feeling, but it's not a feeling that's wanted or desired. So in those 4 minutes, those 30 seconds, you're actually able to touch the balance beam. If you fall on every skill, there's no chance you have confidence getting up onto the beam to be then judged out of a 10. So in those moments before you have to mount the beam and perform your skills to the best of your ability and compete in the college space for your team or even for Team USA or individually on an elite stage, it's important that you have the tools in your back pocket to figure out how to refresh your mind. And what I'll say is stories that I've heard from different elite gymnasts, you know, sometimes that takes walking away from the event and refreshing your mind and taking your brain completely off of the 30 seconds that was really bad and putting your brain back into the success that you had in the training gym all the time. In interviews with elite athletes, you'll hear all the time, trust your training, right? This mentality of you've been there once, you've been there many, many times, you've put in the numbers, head back into that mindset versus this current adversity that you're facing. That was really acute. It's in the grand scheme of things, it was a 30 second moment that your brain was a little bit off when it needed to be on the 4 inches of the balance beam. So I've walked with many athletes through that moment. It's walking over and depending on their personality, some of them like to just be completely distracted. We talk about the latest movie that just got released. We talk about, you know, Justin Bieber's album that just got bumped out and that they were listening to in the training room before we started talking. They need that mental distraction before they go and perform. Others need to go be by themselves and they need to make sure that they're in a position where they are focused on dialing in all of the mental cues that they have to be just really dialed in for and really zeroed in for and doing their arm movements the way that they need to place their arms. So they have a physical and a mental component that they're pairing together. But no two things work the same for any individual. So it's really important that you understand yourself the best you possibly can and understand in a certain acute adverse moment, you're able to put forward the practices that are best going to suit you to be at your best when your best is needed. Now, outside of sport, what your best really looks like, I think for us, can look really different. It could be, you know, going to give the next presentation you need to give. It might be stepping up to the plate for your job interview that will change the next phase of your future if you got that job. But walking into a job interview with the mindset that you just fell off the balance beam four times and there's no way you'll ever stay on isn't going to be a great mindset walking into the interview that could shape the rest of your life. You have to be able to understand that there's acute moments of adversity that can be overcome by tools that you put in place with yourself. And you have to understand and be mindful and self-aware of what those tools are. For me, I use a lot of breath work in order to do that. A lot of deep breaths prior by myself in my car before something that's nerve-wracking, do a lot of deep breathing. But I also have found myself stretching. And for me, there's like a physical and mental component to things like stretching. And some call it like yoga practice. It's not that in particular for me. It's just really distracting myself with something physical before I walk into something that I know I've done everything I possibly can do to mentally prepare for. That will be really helpful. So I hope that kind of paints the picture of taking something that is only a very small percentage of the population, like balance beam is for people, and really attaching that acute adversity and overcoming that into more of the space of things like a job interview or, you know, a nerve-wracking phone call or an interesting customer experience.
Yeah, it makes sense. I go to like taking the test, taking the MCAT or taking the SAT, which is gonna set you up for a positive future or not.
Totally.
And I think so, a couple of takeaways that I get from what you said there. So number one is knowing your stuff. So pre that moment that you're about to walk in, you've done your homework, you've done the prep, you know this exam material, you know the company you're walking in to interview for, you know all the balance beam flips and twists and tricks, you've done them 1,000 times. So there's that whole piece. And then part two, which is that acute part, is knowing yourself then, and knowing, you know, I mean, we have these opportunities, they come along more frequently. I mean, you're not always standing on the balance beam for the Olympics,
right?
But I mean, there's a crucial conversation or an exam or a kind of any walk of life, you know, if you're a sports person, then 2 days a week, you've got this chance to excel. And so it gives you opportunity to try things. So yeah. Hey, if you don't know breath work and you don't know journaling and you don't feel like you have tools in the toolkit, start testing different ideas and see if you can find that thing that helps you.
Absolutely. Go for a walk. Watch a show on Netflix, like have some sort of escapism that is a healthy escapism. It's not an unhealthy escapism, right? That will allow you to put yourself, your mind into the best place that it possibly can be prior to doing something that, I use this term loosely, but a moment of stress, right? A moment of difference. It's important to know what the best way to posture your heart, posture your mind prior to going into that moment of stress, especially when the stress is expected, right? Earlier we were talking about when stress is unexpected, it's very hard for you to like know, oh, I know at 2 o'clock today, I'm going to get a moment of stress. So I'm going to make sure that I watch this Netflix show and I'm going to stretch and I'm going to, you know, do breath work for the 30 minutes prior so I'm ready for that. That's not how life works. There is definitely moments where you're going to have to just, you know, spend your life really in a posture of making sure that you have mentally and physically prepared your heart for hard moments, but not live your life in expectation of them, because that's what fear is. So it's making sure that you take the moments you can expect stress and attaching some good mental health practices prior to those to make sure you're prepared for those acute pieces, but it's also making sure that your heart is healthy and your mind is healthy in a space as you head into life and the storms that it presents, to be able to weather those storms the best way that you possibly can.
Yeah, so it's like anything else that's worth pursuing. It's hard. It's hard. It's not the same for everybody. There's not a one size fits all to dealing with these things. I've been trying to not doing a good job of it, but I've been trying to shut things off, of trying to just find no screen time, meditation, breathing, walking, kind of like you said. It does feel very boring. It feels like I'm not doing anything, whatever, but I think I still need to work on that muscle, because I think there is a lot of to be unlocked behind that, and kind of just getting the noise out, because I have a pretty noisy brain. So I definitely have work to do in that realm as well. But
yeah,
so I think everybody's kind of at their own level, or they're on their own journey as far as like how well they're doing in these situations. You're a guy that is like talking to these high level athletes, and you've got this acumen for it, but I'm sure you're not perfect either, and you second guess yourself. And
it's kind of where I wanted to take like some of my closing thoughts. But you know, no matter the resume that comes with someone, no matter the acumen that comes with someone, whatever network you're seeing from social media or whatever picture you're choosing to paint about someone, every single person experiences adversity. And that's the point I try to make when I talk to, you know, 12-year-old gymnasts who aspire to go to the Olympics one day. Like the simple fact of, hey, did you know that the GOAT of gymnastics, Simone Biles, did you know that she's fallen on balance beam before? Did you know, in a competition that really mattered? Did you know that she fell? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, have you fallen? Yep. Okay, cool. So like we're all experiencing adversity. It's what you choose to do with it, right? And helping to level those playing fields is really important, just because I think it's important that no one feels higher or lower than another. People just realize that we can all have kumbaya conversations when they're necessary. And also just be able to know that like people are there for you when you need an ear to listen to, because, you know, adversity, it happens. It just happens. Like it comes in a lot of different forms. Your computer could break, your phone could break. That's the first world problems, right? But then on the other side, you could lose a job. A family member could, you know, be really sick or, you know, pass. And there's adversity that gets presented, and you can't prepare for those pieces of the puzzle. But we all need to just make sure that we have I have a little mantra I tell myself, but it's like, keep your head up and keep your heart strong. Like if, as long as you like know that you can keep your head up and your heart strong together, I feel like we can really weather some storms and really fight through adversity the best we possibly can.
Well said. All right. Well, thanks, Corey. It's been really good to talk with you. I really appreciate the time. Have a good day.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for listening today to Listen Up, the Stand Up for Kids podcast. A big thank you to Gabby Villarreal and Billy Wynn for their production and editing support. Find us on YouTube, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, and wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to support Stand Up for Kids, please share this podcast with family, friends, and colleagues. Also, check out our website at standupforkids.org/Orange County, and you can email me directly at michaelo@standupforkids.org to learn more. Please also consider a donation to help getting kids off the streets. 92 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to supporting these kids. I'm your host, Michael Olson, Director of Development at Stand Up for Kids, Orange County. Thanks for listening and have a great day.